Accession number 19794, Reel 1.
This is an interview with Maria Osofsky for the Imperial War Museum Holocaust Exhibition on Tuesday, 9th February 1999. Maria, just to begin with, could you describe your family and your life as a child in Zakopane?
Once you think about Zakopane, you must know that my childhood was beautiful. Zakopane itself is a charming place, winter and summer. My family loved me. I was the only one from the quite a few family branches which had not had any children. So I was spoiled. I was happy. Everything was rosy, even if it wasn't. For me, it was the best childhood I can possibly have.
Tell me a little bit about your school. Try to look at the camera and not at me.
Just imagine that.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That's great.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your school life.
Yes, my father was a civil servant. I went to school with many other young people of my generation. We went to school on skis because that was the way of travel in that particular part of Poland. We had many friends, and at the very beginning, I must stress it very strongly, we had friends from Jewish families, from families who came with the Pravoslav Church, and that was the happiness of the childhood. Nobody really knew any difference. The people who didn't belong to our religion just did not come into the classroom to say the prayers. That was the difference. Otherwise, nobody ever felt anything different. We were playing with them, with each other, because playing with them is already a wrong expression. Playing with each other, we visited each other at our homes, and as I said, that was totally beautiful childhood.
Did you come from a very religious family?
Everybody in Poland is Roman Catholic. So the grades of religion beliefs are difficult to actually recognize. Yes, of course I went to church every day, every Sunday, but the school actually asked us to go, and we always had the school mass. Of course there was prayers before we started work, and the prayers after we finish. And when the Germans came in 1939, and 2 months after coming to Zakopane, they came one day and simply told us to go away because the school was no more. Then we, kids, because we're kids, we were 14, coming into 15, we stood up from our own free will and we sang and said the prayer. And to the credit to that officer, German army officers, because they were still army then, not SS. He let us do this. And everybody who was in the classroom joined. And that was our first life opposition to the occupant. And it came quite naturally to us. So that was the background. Religion was part of our lives.
Staying with your childhood, what kind of leisure activities did you have with your family and your friends?
Well, Zakopane itself, there is a fantastic saying which the Guralen folk, as we call them, as the German call them, Guralen folk, the Gurale, the people who are living there for generations, they say, oh yes, it's so easy in Zakopane. We have 10 months of winter, but then it's summer and summer and summer. So because you have 10 months of winter, your activities are skis. You ski whenever you ski going shopping, you ski to school, you ski for your pleasure. That was the there was no room for anything else almost, because the winter months were really that long.
Tell me a little bit about your mother.
Well, she was influenced in my life, I'm absolutely certain, as much as my father was. Her own story was very strange. She was half Russian. She hated Russians. Her father died in Russian captivity in 19th century. So there was this feeling of patriotism always in the family. And she was older than my father, which made me actually to be more friendly with my father than and in awe of my mother. And I think that was quite a good combination, because I listened to when I needed to, and I was spoiled when nobody else looked. Oh, sorry, but this is how I see it.
What did you know about, before war broke out, did you hear your parents talking about the possibility of war?
I am certain that they must have, but I have no clear recollection of it. Look, the war came, I was 14. Those are political considerations, are not the stuff the kids are feeding on or off. The moment when the war broke, I remember all of us, all friends, girls and boys alike, we went to church to pray, and we were offering our lives just to war to be stopped then and there, which, you know, again just shows you how terribly naive and very, very, very sweet actually we all have been. So innocence is the innocence of real life, I think, is the most important point in my story as I start to tell it.
How long was it before the SS arrived after the outbreak of war?
Now, I have to come back to that question of Zakopane. It was a specific place. And the German love for it was totally specific as well, because they knew that they can take their soldiers there and have them rested, and the wounded even have them looked after. Zakopane was a gear for it. There was many private sanatoriums, hospitals. It was all well organized. So at the beginning, it was army who came in. And with this army, we had no problem. I remember very well myself and my Jewish friend, who spoke German much better than I, because I learned French at school, not German. We were going to where the German soldiers were stationed, and we were begging them for bread, and always coming with the bread from those young soldiers who didn't really felt any animosity against us, neither did we. The food situation in Zakopane was terribly bad. This is why we had to do things really quite incredible, because the lines were cut and the food was only coming for the German army. But they were giving us that bread. They were sharing it with us. And as I said, my Jewish friend speaking German was my companion in those excursions. But because of the specific situation of Zakopane, big plans were made for it, which brings us to the question of how quickly Zakopane was cleared of the Jewish population, because they were there, they were with us, they had businesses, they had houses, they had villas which they rented winter and summer, and it was the sudden, like, for us, disappearance of those people, which was probably the first real signal that things are going to be very, very tough. I know for fact that there were some executions of Polish citizens and prominent Jewish citizens in Chochołowa, Dolina Chochołowska, in early 40s. That I knew, as I know that many other people knew. And there was talk about the Jewish work camp somewhere in that vicinity as well. But that, of course, nobody from us could see, and nobody actually attempted to see. Not us young people. But then the whole thing was cleared absolutely, and then the SS troops came in, and this is the very beginning of 40.
Did your Jewish friend herself disappear?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have heard, because I and my family, funny enough, was my mother was friends with one of the ladies who she was a wife of the baker, the Zakopane baker, Rotter family, and two of the girls, Tosia and Fela, they were in my class. So we were friendly with them. We visited each other in our homes. I went to, they were richer than my family was. So I very often went to their houses because they made parties more often. And they had a nanny who was a Polish girl. And when they were taken away, the nanny went with them, and we never seen or heard of them since.
Did you have any idea about why the Jews suddenly disappeared? Did you hear anything from your parents or from other adults?
The talk, which I suppose must have been, was that absolutely unique status of Zakopane, which the German authorities wanted to turn into their own holiday town. And to prove it, in February 40, they already had a big happening, which was called German Army Ski Competition. And it was for that reason, I think, Zakopane was the one which was selected to be treated so harshly.
Can you tell me the circumstances under which you were sent to stay in Warsaw with your aunts?
In 41, at the end of the 41, something new was happening, namely, young people were getting so-called calling papers to go and work in Germany. You never knew where you will be sent, you never knew what you will be doing. The contact with the families was almost forbidden, I want to say German word, was not possible. The letters did not arrive. Letters were not allowed. Those people were not allowed to or encouraged to send any correspondence, because very often they were taken to very specific places to work, like ammunition factories, like plane factories, and so on and so forth. So probably from the German point of view, it was essential that they did not kept contact with the Poland itself. And to avoid this happening to me, my mother and my father decided that the Warsaw in their opinion, was a safer place. Once I got the papers, they can say that I left home, they don't know where I am, so they sent me to my auntie to Warsaw, and that's how I arrived in 42 at the beginning, during the winter, I remember, 42 in Warsaw itself.
Can you describe your aunt's house? I believe it was near the ghetto.
Can we cut?
Yes, Doc.
Because it's my sweetheart, it's not...
So tell us about your other aunt's house, Maria.
Yeah. Well, I had many aunties, which were my mother friends from her school days in Warsaw, with which we kept in contact. And one of them was dentist. I hated going to the dentist, of course, but there was no escape. I had to go to her. And I remember, it's very sad, but I don't remember her name. But I remember she was having her house, and her dentist cabinet was in Długa Strasse, Ulica Długa, which actually was the border street to ghetto. And I went there one day, and I was seated on my dentist chair, and suddenly there was a big commotion, and my auntie said to her son, who came into the cabinet, "Don't worry, don't worry. This is Maria. This is all right." And they asked me, "Get up, get up." And I got up from my chair, and they took the floor covering from the floor, and there was this hole in the ground, meaning that they had to open the wooden floor, and there was. That was the way into which they got into ghetto. And he was very anxious to pass on the parcels which he brought, which was food and I don't know what else anyway. And so he packed everything into this opening. He disappeared himself. Everything cover came up. I sat on the chair, and I was proceeded accordingly to my needs of my teeth. And then when I was going away, my auntie kissed me and hugged me, and she said, "Maria, you know that you are not to tell this to anybody." And I said, "But of course, auntie, that much I already knew."
Did you have any other experiences like that during your time in Warsaw?
No. That was exceptional. That made me think. But on another hand, I was kept so much away from whenever was happening in real life. My aunties were terrified for me. I went to school because this was allowed. That was a school where I learned a sanitary skills as a nurse for the hospital. That was allowed by the Germans, and that was that school where I went. Official school. But there the girls, who were quite often older than me, talked about things which I'm sure were conspiracy, you know, Maquis, underground army. But my aunt insisted that I never got friendly with anybody. They were really trying to preserve me. And this is how I was kept so badly informed for all those time I stay with them.
Can you describe the atmosphere in Warsaw at that terrible time?
In Warsaw itself, the presence of the German army was quite evident. There were patrols on the streets. The trams the electric trams were segregated. Some of them were Nur für Deutsche. Some of them had the front partition that only the German could sit there. What we felt very strongly, that was the shortage of food, cuts in electricity. For example, for many a night we had to sit with the lamps, which were really from different epoch, different century almost, because the electricity was not to be had. That was the savings they were making for some reasons. I don't know, maybe coal or something. Anyway, so that was a feel of oppression. And the most visible sign of it was at the beginning. Remember that I am talking about 42 and very beginning of 43. There was the existence of ghetto in the middle of Warsaw, which in 40 and 41 was still quite easily obtained. The trams went there, the people came in and go out. But at that time they closed the ghetto, and only few could escape, and those few were very often children who came to Warsaw streets to beg for food. But the tragedy of those kids were that they did not speak Polish. They were from ghettos somewhere deep in eastern Poland. They only spoke Yiddish, and so there was really extremely difficult to help such people, because if you don't talk to them, if you don't explain few things, how can you really give them a proper help? But this is how it was, and those kids we have seen on Warsaw Street. One day I remember very clearly a kid of this sort suddenly appeared on our street, so my auntie took him in, given him a bath, because poor thing, he was full of lice and dirt. So she cleaned him and fed him and cleaned him again. And I had to run to my other friend's house where the young children were and bring him some clean clothes, not trying to say why I suddenly needed them, because one was always conscious about the dangers. And then, of course, before the police hour, which was then 8 o'clock, we simply put him out to the street. There was no any other way. And he, you know, happily marched off in direction which he could only knew. But we looked out for him in our street and neighbor street, but he never came back.
What were the penalties for helping or sheltering Jewish people?
Well, now I know that Poland was the only country in which fact that you helped the Jew was a death sentence for you and your family. And as a matter of fact, in Auschwitz, we were made to march in presence of the family who took a Jew into their house, and they were all sent to Auschwitz with their kids, who were then like 15 or 50 or a little older. And they were given the numbers, they were prisoners, they were made to stand marching route of our commandos with the big placards. That's what happens to people who help Jews. So I knew that was, but then I don't know if I was so conscious of that happening at that time. I learned about it later.
Can you stop there, Jim?
Mm.
Okay. I'm just going to... So if you just talk about your particular circumstances in Pawiak and your view of the ghetto uprising?
Eventually, like many people of my generation and older, I got arrested. I got arrested by Gestapo. I was sent to Pawiak, which happened to stand in the middle of ghetto itself. Because I was underage, I was given a specific task, which was always given to those girls who were of my age group. Namely, I was supposed to keep the courtyards of the women prison, mind you, this is important, not the men prison, not the whole prison, but the women prison, courtyards in good order, sweeping them, picking up the whenever was there which shouldn't, and having some other duties as well. For that reason, when the Jewish uprising in April 43 started, my task became really almost impossible, because we have to remember that the Germans fought with those Jewish fighters with, first of all, fire. That was the easiest way. Go house after house, put a, whenever dynamite or whenever they needed, and start fires. So ghetto during the uprising was burning, burning from top to the bottom. And the streets which were next to the Pawiak were as much affected like any others. And what I had to do was then clean this rubbish, because actually there was actually bits falling from the sky on that courtyard. Papers, piece of wood, all sorts of, which were by then, of course, dust and blackened bits. But nevertheless, that, and because of this, because of my duties, I could see the things which other people could not, because people sitting in the cells in prison themselves had the windows which were up, going into the ghetto blocked up. And I have to tell you that with my own eyes I have seen people jumping from the floors above. I am certain to their death, because the house was totally destroyed by the fires burning. And I think the terrible happening of the war were never more clear in my mind than when watching a scene like this.